This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. What would you like to get off your chest right now? Are you feeling lonely, unappreciated, or misunderstood? When you keep these feelings bottled up, they can affect you negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and work through whatever is weighing you down. It's a great way to increase your self-awareness, change negative thought patterns, and more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/beherenow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/beherenow.
Hi everyone, this is Chris Grasso with the Indie Spirituals Podcast on the Be Here Now Network, and my guest today is East Forrest. Mr. Forrest, thank you for being with us, and I should have asked you before we started. I know your name's Trevor, but East Forrest, I also know that Ram Dass gave you the name Krishna, which maybe we can talk about that. What do you prefer to be called?
East Forrest is cool for today, or some people call me East, whatever okay. Feels good to you.
I like East, repping the East side here, so I'll call you East, that works. So thank you for taking the time to be with me. I'm going to read your bio real quick, and then we're going to hop into this conversation. So East Forrest has been the leader of underground sound healing ceremonies around the world since 2008. Using music as a tool, he has trailblazed the field of organic tech, building bridges between the digital and natural world. Being fully independent and playing in the private shadows allowed the sound of East Forrest to emerge, an emotional and spacious musical lexicon with a sound that took shape out of a practical need to play solo for 5 to 6 hours while guiding a room full of listeners in deep meditation. Live looping and layered keyboard melodies filled the musical space while angelic vocals and original field recordings floated above. Word organically spread, and a devoted community shared East Forrest's early albums, many of which were live recordings captured directly from his sound healing performances. Moving into festivals, theaters, and clubs, electronic beats and diverse live instrumentation eventually joined in, from strings and analog synthesizers to African kora. East Forrest's electroacoustic ethereal sound continued to evolve, and he found himself performing in a diverse range of settings from South by Southwest, Google, Mystery Land, to Grace Cathedral, Summit at Sea, as well as his own TED Talk. East Forrest released a collaborative album with legendary spiritual teacher Ram Dass, which this podcast is hosted on his network, on August 9th. The full album, East Forrest x Ram Dass, features East Forrest's music accompanied by new teachings from Ram Dass. So all of that said, again, East, thank you for being with me today.
Yeah, that's a lot of words.
I know. Dude.
Wow.
I know, right?
We should get that shortened.
Yeah. So yeah, like I do a lot of interviews and I do a lot of speaking engagements, and people, I feel the same way after the bio. I'm like, I'm just some like punk hip hop kid who, you know, likes weird music and shit. But
So
anyways, that said, the way I typically like to start my podcast, just for the benefit of any listeners that aren't familiar with you and your work, if you could give us some background, like you can start wherever you want, childhood, teenage, whatever, but kind of if you don't mind sharing a little bit about yourself and what led you to this path and where you are today.
Sure. Well, thanks again for asking me on.
I appreciate your time.
I think my upbringing was very typical and very what I think of as American. And there's a certain kind of pain and trauma, this latent trauma of growing up in the suburbs. And I grew up in the Pacific Northwest outside Portland and Salem, Oregon. And, you know, on the face of it, a very loving and very safe childhood, but in some ways in that safety, at least for me, there was something about my own spirit as a child that felt the oppression of just culture and expectations and the normality of having to fit into this system that I didn't want to fit into. It was in my late 20s. I was living in New York City. I think I was going for this sort of like dream of the fame, money, all that stuff. So I was like, I want to go to the big city and make it happen. And over time, like as the universe was sort of orchestrating life, things were breaking apart. Things were not working. And I started to explore things like shamanic initiations and plant medicines, and through that, more meditation. And basically, it just really started to explode my inner life and to see that there was more. And I really started to fall out of love with the things that weren't really working anyway, the things I was chasing. And I started to just have more of prioritizing my inner life. And one of those things was to just start making music for myself. I'd been making music before that, but it was much more of sort of a commercialized approach, I think.
Sure.
Certainly those were my goals. And so once I started making music for myself and making music that I could use as a tool to really explore that inner space, things really started to shift. And, you know, there's an irony that like as soon as I stopped trying to like make it or stopped trying to make music that would be popular, the music became popular.
Right.
and then, you know, after years passed, it became my job and became a career, which is beautiful. There's something in there, sort of in the Joseph Campbell idea of following your bliss.
Right.
And that's still kind of the rudder that I steer my ship with. I'm always trying to step back and say, okay, wait a minute, don't get lost in this thing or that thing, this trapping. You know, why are you doing this? What really excites you? You know, what of this is, you know, getting back to the original feeling and that motivation.
I love that. You know, I resonate deeply because I grew up in the suburbs as well, but on the East Coast, and it was, you know, people think like you have this easy life, but actually it's not that way for some people. You know, I was punk rock, I was hip hop, skateboarding, in a rural town that was very athletic based, and nothing wrong with athletics, but I'm a musician as well, playing in like punk and hardcore bands and indie rock bands. And, you know, I stood out like a sore thumb and really like got bullied, and teachers treated me terribly. And, but music was a saving grace for me. And, being a musician, I wish I could just turn my camera. I think you'd appreciate, I have like an old school weighted Studio 88 MIDI and, all kinds of just rare vintage equipment. I adore music. So one musician to another, we share a lot in common for sure. And I agree. Anytime like I have found, whether it's writing a song or I have 3 books published, so writing a book, if I'm forcing myself to do this in a way that, you know, it's not coming from an intuitive sense, or not intuitive, but I just feel moved to do it, it ends up, honestly, in my case, it's ended up in broken guitars and a cracked computer screen. And, you know, back when Chris used to be angry. Now, Chris, thank you to meditation, rarely gets, you know, broken screens or whatever. But so I really appreciate you sharing that. And so, you know, music is it's your life now, right? It's what you do. It's
my job, too. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's what I do full time and have been for probably about the last 5 years or so.
Yeah.
And it's a huge blessing to be able to do that, and a huge blessing that, you know, you can forge a kind of living with that. And, you know, my goal really is I'm sort of trying to gather more resources. Like I look at it like the more popular music can become, the more resources I then have to essentially like hire my friends to do cool things and do bigger, cooler tours and do bigger projects. Like, you know, the Ram Dass record, that was totally independent, where I served as, you know, it's my label that put it out.
Yeah.
So I'm funding studio time and musicians and stuff. And, but even with that, you know, we're pretty lean on how we do things, and I'm mixing it myself, and I'm doing a lot of the things myself.
Right.
And we were able to put that out for, you know, probably I haven't actually, I kind of purposely don't crunch all the numbers.
I understand.
Because I don't want to know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'd say it was $15,000 or less, you know, for
wow.
everything, mastering. And I don't, maybe that you put in vinyl production. I probably won't count that. That's pretty expensive.
Yeah, but. That is. But I mean, for a record these days, that's almost unheard of. And it, you couldn't tell sound wise. It sounds like you did it in a professional studio, man.
Well, we did. And I got lucky, you know, and we, and I have all these amazing musicians and, you know, yeah. a lot of them are friends. So they, I think working with Ram Dass helped get them on board. And I have access to a studio here where I am in Boulder, Utah, that Ron Johnson, who owns the studio, essentially gifted me the time. And so I'm working on beautiful API console and barefoot monitors. And so it definitely took things up a notch.
Cool. Yeah. So we're going to talk about that Ram Dass record in a minute. But I wanted to ask you, what were some of your, this is a kind of a two-part question. What were some of your early musical influences, which is part one? We can start there. Go ahead and answer. Anything that really moved you?
Well, the early ones are so embarrassing. I won't even talk about them because, again, when you're in the suburbs, I wasn't as cool as you. I wasn't introduced to that cool music. You know, it's mostly the radio.
Sir, listened to New Kids on the Block before, so I'm throwing myself under the bus.
I listened to them. You know, Vanilla Ice. That was, I probably listened to that 100,000 times, maybe. Yeah. What was the Parents Just Don't Understand? I thought that was like a brilliant
Fresh
song
Friends,
when I was little.
Yeah.
It was pretty bad, but as I went into like college, things started to expand. I went to across the country from Oregon to New York, and I started to just expand my horizons and meet different kinds of people, more multicultural. You know, I got a lot more into jazz.
Yeah.
And I got more into the piano because I wasn't really much of a piano player before that. But then all of a sudden at college, like, they had beautiful instruments, and it was the first time I was shown by a friend how to like write music, meaning just like a chord approach. So really simplistic way to write songs.
Yeah.
And I was kind of a little singer kid. So it's like now I could suddenly sing all those pop songs, like Billy Joel songs or Beatles songs or whatever. So it just, now it was fun. And so then I just started really getting into like trying to deconstruct what was happening in a lot of these songs. So then I got really into, I think the three big piano guys that are still big guys for me is Keith Jarrett, who's a jazz guy and a classical guy, who's just like a monster of inspiration for me.
Yeah.
Bill Evans, who's a really famous jazz pianist, and Bruce Hornsby, who's a more of a pop piano player, but the way he plays, I think, is so awesome. And all those guys, when I hear it, I'm like, oh, that's Bruce Hornsby playing on this other person's song. I can tell he's got a style.
Yeah.
And I dig it. I dig his stuff. So those guys really influenced me. But I have a really wide-ranging interest in music. I'd say it was everything except for metal and country. So I had a big hip-hop phase, and I still love hip-hop, but not so much contemporary hip-hop. But,
same.
You know, I was there for the classic rise of hip-hop, you know, early roots period, you know, Mos Def and Talib and all those guys. And, and I saw a lot of them play way back. And, so I was really into beats, and I was really into grooves. I was into jazz. I was into popular music. And then I was into electronic music. I was just then getting into like Aphex Twin and Autechre and all these guys, Boards of Canada.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So all that mashup, actually, you kind of do hear it in my music because it goes into like, there's stuff on the Ram Dass record that actually goes across that breadth from, there's a track that's sort of like hip hop or Gorillaz.
Yeah.
There's stuff that's like contemporary classical to ambient to electronic.
I love that. Same. I was born in 78. So, you know, I grew up in what I consider the golden era of hip hop. Like, I have a lot of respect for the origins. But, you know, you're mentioning jazz, and I'm thinking like Tribe and Diggable Planets.
Yeah.
And
Bruce
Hornsby when Tupac took that piano and did his thing. But,
you know,
like, I still rock like all the time De La Soul and Far Side and Souls of Mischief and, you know, like that stuff, Gangstar and the Guru's Jazz Mataz stuff. Like, but I agree with you. I do a lot of work with youth and mental health and healing residential facilities, and a lot of my work is music based. And when we talk about work, and you know, pretty much I've learned that if a hip hop artist's name starts with Young or Lil, it's garbage. Like, I don't mean to be opinionated, but like, you know, music used to, like, especially hip hop used to have a message. And yeah, sure, I listened to like NWA and Mobb Deep and more of the heavier stuff, but like, there was real passion and real music. And even NWA and Mobb Deep really were reflecting, you know, they're in their own way, their surroundings. Some of the songs, you know, I definitely don't listen to because I don't resonate, where it's just objectifying women. But so, you know, comparatively that, and, you know, to what is out today, though, in all fairness, there is still great hip hop. It's just way underground, like the Def Jux stuff and the Doomtree Rhymesayers, all that stuff, Atmosphere.
Yeah, I mean, it's hip hop is one of the, I think it is still R&B and hip hop. It's definitely the biggest money making field right now in music. It's the most streamed music. And there's some of the most hands down forward thinking producers in that field.
Oh, yeah.
I think for me, I just kind of lost track of like how to navigate it, because a lot of it became either so weird. And I don't even mean like, I like weird music, but like the trappy stuff started to get in this weird place. Was like, is that even, it's hardly melodic. And it's like, I have nothing from my ear to grab onto, and lyrically too. I wasn't sure what, you know, but I hear stuff though. Sometimes I'm just like, wow, that they're really pushing the limits and the edges of the genre for sure.
Yeah. Well, so that kind of segues into the second part of that question, which is, and this can be from any time in your life, was there ever a time, and it can be more than one, where you remember hearing, whether it was a particular album or song or just artist, for the first time that like stopped you dead in your tracks, like cut you to the core, like the earth just stood still for a minute and you were like, what is, whoa.
Yeah, there's been a few of those over the years. One that comes to mind because it was a live experience was Sigur Rós.
Oh, one of my all-time favorites.
Yeah.
Them and Mum. I don't know if you know Mum, but they're from Iceland as well.
I do.
I love them. Yeah.
Yes, the first time I saw Sigur Rós was the first time I'd ever heard them, period. And I saw them at the Beacon Theater in New York in 2007, I think it was.
Okay.
And my friend had encouraged me to go and bought the tickets, and I went and handed me like a mushroom chocolate and it's a seated show. And I remember not knowing anything, and the show started and my heart was starting to crack open and just my mind was relaxing, and it changed my life because it was so emotional and so theatrical and beautiful.
Yeah.
I just was like, I remember walking out of the theater. The Beacon Theater is up on, I think, 77th and Broadway on the west side. And I walked down at night to Columbus Circle. I couldn't go home. I was like, I needed to just be alone. And I sat down at Columbus Circle at night and was just so inspired. I was like, I really want to make music like that, that inspires other people like that, that engenders a feeling in me like that. It was sort of this numinous, liminal, inspiring, infinite space. And they really like lit a fire under me, that and the way it was done live, I didn't know how I could connect those dots, but that was before I was really making East Forest music. I was just starting.
Yeah.
And so that show really showed me like, oh, I can aim for a particular emotional quality.
Yeah.
And I think that really helped inspire my first record.
That's amazing. I would say, yeah, I have multiple as well. There's four or five big ones, but their first record, I'll butcher the title, I don't even know how to say it, the Agatis Berejan or whatever.
Yeah.
The first time I heard that in the early 2000s with an ex-girlfriend, she actually introduced me to it. And it was like I became like enmeshed and I couldn't get enough. And then I got Talk and, you know, everything, all the Rare Imports. And the Untitled record is just, it's one of their kind of darker, but absolutely, it's hauntingly beautiful. Jonesy is an absolute brilliant genius. I wasn't huge on the Royce Boy Sleep stuff he did with Alex, but it's all subjective, you know.
I'm going to go see that show next weekend.
Oh, I didn't know that they were
in Denver.
Is Jonesy and Alex?
They're doing a 10-year anniversary tour with an orchestra.
Oh, yeah. See, I would go see it live for sure. I would go see Jonesy anytime.
I trust that like this will be a great show.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely looking forward to that.
Awesome. Well, I'm very excited and jealous. So let's talk about the Ram Dass record. I wanted to read, there was a little write-up about it that I wanted to share with our listeners, and then we're gonna go into that. So in June of 2018, East Forest was invited to Ram Dass's home in Maui to join in conversation and record brand new teachings from the legendary teacher. After capturing these words of wisdom, East Forest returned to his studio in the high desert of southern Utah to compose the soundtrack to beautifully support each song subject. In these new recordings, Ram Dass's words speak masterfully to the modern challenges that so many face with technology, dark thoughts, the nature of soul, and so much more. The new East Forest record also features guest appearances from the likes of Trevor Hall, Hammock, Grammy-nominated artist Krishna Das, who is a friend and also on the podcast. And it wasn't noted here, but I was so jazzed to see Stick from Dead Prez is on there.
Yeah, right up your alley.
Oh, man, yeah. When I heard that, I'm like, what? We're going to have to talk about that. But all framing Ram Dass's teachings with contemporary voices and cementing the 87-year-old spiritual teacher into an echelon of relevancy and immediacy, offering a direct antidote for a highly polarized nation that is deeply in need of a universal voice of wisdom, connection, and unconditional love. And then there's a quote followed by Ram Dass. Music is a language that all souls understand. I'm honored that my teachings have been paired with a musician like East Forest, who has crafted an album with so much love. So I figure let's talk about, I mean, we can go anywhere with that record you want. But first of all, when did you start reading Ram Dass, or how were you introduced to him? And, you know, if you want to kind of go from there into what inspired you to do this mashup record with Ram Dass.
I mean, I think Be Here Now was probably my introduction. And then I'm a sound audio guy. Yeah. And so hearing his talks definitely took it to another level
right. Of
my connection with him.
Yeah.
And it was his ability. He had that intellectual angle of the Harvard professor.
Right.
Which I resonated with, and then the psychedelic angle, which I resonated with, and then this sort of secular spiritualism. So that he was just kind of a perfect trifecta for me, beyond being highly charismatic and entertaining. So he's just one of those guys who's a teacher for me in the background. And then I started to have a deeper relationship with Maharaji, which is a story in itself, after I went through a divorce about 2.5 years ago. And that started to really make some weird changes in my life, which was odd. And then I remember fast forward to when I was sitting with Ram Dass and I hit record and I started to put all the dots together of like, oh, my God, like this is all like a Maharaji thing.
Yeah.
And that really blew my heart open because I always thought I was just this guy who read about these things. I didn't realize we're all under the blanket. And Ram Dass was just... It's just one of those things, man. I mean, I could look back and say I had this idea or it was the right timing, which are all true, but it was guided by something larger because I can't say why I was the one that was granted the ability to oversee this project. Because there were other people interested in doing similar things. I don't think on such a grand scale.
Right.
And so the fact that I wanted to bring in lots of artists, and we're continuing to do that now with reworks and remixes.
Yeah.
So we're actually now bringing even more artists in.
That's super cool.
But it's just all an effort to connect Ram Dass's stuff to new ears, new generation.
So I did want to just quickly interject before we go deeper into the record, because you mentioned Maharaji. A lot of listeners on this podcast, of course, know who he is. But a lot of people that listen to my show may not necessarily. You know, I have a picture, several around, and there's a picture of him. He always watches me while I do my podcast. And you know, I remember reading Be Here Now, and we share very similar in the approach Ram Dass takes and how it resonates to us. And so when you say like it was under the guise of his blanket, like, you know, I just want to say to listeners who might, you know, be a little skeptical about that. There's a story very quickly that I'll share where the first time I had interviewed Ram Dass, this is several years ago, was not for this podcast, for something else. And it was just after I'd signed the book deal for my first book. And I had not told anyone over there about it. He, like, literally, I didn't talk to Raghu, who helped set up the, nobody knew. And at the end of the interview, he and I were just chatting. And he says to me, you have a new book coming out, or you finished a new book. And I'm like, yeah, there's literally no way he could have known this. Like, no one knew. And he said, if you'd like, I would like to write a blurb for it. And I, like, a tear, like, came down my eye, because I'm like, you know, I'm feeling like Maharaji in my heart. And I was like, that would be incredible. And then he says, and that comes from right there, like, pointing up to, you know, Maharaji. And
wow,
I actually,
cool.
Yeah, I have it on video, and I put it up on YouTube, because I'm of a skeptical nature and question everything. But, you know, when things like that happen, like when Ram Dass talks in Be Here Now about Under the Stars and Maharaji talking about his mother's spleen, and he's like, how could he know that? That was, like, just one of, you know, my many Maharaji stories. And then for Ram Dass to ask me to endorse his most recent book was, like, absolutely surreal to me. Like, what? Me? You know, so anyway, so for listeners, anyone who is skeptical, I'm, you know, anyone that knows me knows I am not a bullshitter at all. So that is some very real potent stuff right there. So you do the album. It's absolutely amazing. What was the experience personally like working with Ram Dass? Was there any exceptionally profound experiences you had there?
Sure.
I mean, yeah, kind of a dumb question, but, like,
in general, just having it happen was profound,
yeah.
Because I didn't know if I would get anything from him. He could have a bad day where he can't really speak,
right,
or yes, didn't want to, or who knows what. So just flying over and not knowing what would happen. I told Raghu, I was like, look, I'm making a record about this man's legacy and work. I think at a minimum, I need to meet him and look him in the eye and just say, hey, this is happening, soul to soul. And that was my only goal.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I might get a few things from him and the rest I would pull from talks in his archive. But I didn't know, I wasn't sure that I would get what I got, which is an entire record's worth. Like, it was actually exactly enough for a record. It's like 14 different mini subjects, which of course made 14 tracks. And I cut very little out of it.
Yeah.
I didn't expect him to give me such concise, poetic, perfect, really perfect little micro teachings, start to finish, with humor and tags and opening lines and imagery. I was truly blown away.
Yeah.
And then the way it's laborious to do it, because there's these long, long pauses between his words. So it took the actual tape recording, let's say 3-4 hours, and it truncated down to 15 minutes of talking.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was a really long, drawn out process, but I was so pleased that once I took out some of those pauses, or got, like, the phrases each one, and once I started putting them into music, they worked so well in music, and your ear didn't care anymore or even hear the pauses, because now it's inside this rhythm of music. Mm-hmm. And that was something I think I knew intuitively might work, but I wasn't sure. And so there was a real risk involved. It was like, I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to get. And I don't know how this is going to work with my music, but let's give it a shot. And so I was pleasantly surprised at how well it started to mesh together and how open Raghu and the team was to me really just doing my thing and, you know, artistically and creatively pushing the limit a bit.
Yeah. It came out incredibly. It doesn't feel forced at all. And it's so interesting to hear that, you know, you had all of that silence, which I know all about because I've interviewed Ram Dass many times. And I actually appreciate that in our interviews and our interactions, because there's so much, like, in that space. Obviously, that doesn't work for an album like yours, but it's incredible to know that, because it did. It worked out perfectly. It sounds incredible.
Yeah. And it makes him, he also is very concise and deliberate. So, I mean, that's also what it brings to it, is that he's probably now, when I ask him a question, going to say, you know, 30 words instead of 500, like in the old days.
Right. Yes.
Like, it probably would have been this long conversation if this was 30, 40 years ago.
Right.
And I would have picked out little phrases. And now it was like, he just would sit, you know, he'd think for minutes before speaking.
Right.
And then he would just say pretty much exactly what you hear on the record.
Absolutely beautiful. And so let's talk about some of the guests that I mentioned. You know, Trevor Hall, most people listening, I'm sure, know him. And
sure.
Krishna Das, I'm a huge fan of his as well. I definitely want to ask you how you got Stick involved from Dead Prez. How did that all come together?
Well, Stick's not one I talk about much because I don't get asked as much about it. So I'd love to just tell you about him.
I mean, please do.
So I would write tracks and I'd start to play around with putting Ram Dass into particular tracks, and then I'd just try to serve the song. So I'd think like, what does this need? Whether it's like, I really feel like this needs a cello, or this needs a string section, or this would be cool if it had African kora, or this needs a female singer. Like, I was looking for opportunities for featured artists, but some songs didn't want anything. So you're like, I can't force anything on this one because it's not going to help.
Right.
And so that track that became Electronic Sea, I always was sort of vibing a rapper, an MC, and I was a little nervous about it. So I kept sitting with it. It's like, is that really what I think would work best as opposed to a singer? And I kept thinking, I think so. I think it would work. So I just started putting out feelers and not having a lot of luck, you know, with the traditional hip hop world, really, because they're all about, it's a lot about money.
Yeah.
And it's in that world that, you know, features and stuff is a big thing. So it's not like, oh, wow, I'm getting asked to feature. It's like this stuff happens all the time. And it's very like business and political. And so I wasn't having much luck. And time was running out. And then for some reason, I just remembered a friend of mine, this director named Aaron Copeland, who I'd worked with on another project where I played music and he was the director, and he's deep seeped into the hip hop world. He's in LA. And I just sent him a text and was like, hey man, you know, I got this track. I don't know if there's anyone you could introduce me to. And he knew Stick. He's like, you know, I think Stick would be interested. Let me link you up. Text with Stick. I'm like, here's the thing. Here's the track. Stick's like, yeah. And I'm like, look, man, I don't mean to be pushy, but if we're going to do this, it's got to be like next week. You know, and he's in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And I was in, I don't know where I was at the time, Boise, I think. So we just like talked on the phone. I had to take a leap of faith. I'm like, I'm going to go for it. I was like, Stick, I'm going to book a studio in Atlanta on Thursday. I'm going to fly in. Does that sound cool? We'll meet up. It'll be, don't worry. You know, we'll bang this out and I'll come back. And we continued to talk on the phone. We talked, he wanted to process a lot about what the song was about and what Ram Dass was saying. And like, we did a lot of kind of pre-production, just discussion about the subject. And it's a tricky song because Ram Dass, it was one, I think we might've got interrupted in between by Dasima or something.
Oh,
so like,
sure, yeah.
I almost felt like it wasn't the tightest of all of them as like an idea.
Yeah.
There was still a lot of meat there, but it was a little bit like room for interpretation and it kind of switches gears halfway.
Right.
It's tricky. And so Stick was really picking up on that. And we talked, so we talked a lot and he was writing lyrics and we were playing around with stuff on the phone. So I flew in, I landed at like 5. I think the session was at 7. I went straight to the studio. He shows up, we meet for the first time. We start just recording and he writes all new lyrics on the spot and a lot of back and forth about, you know, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? So it's very collaborative in that sense. We had a really good time. I probably got back to this Airbnb I rented at like 3 a.m, flight left at like 8, and then I was back in Boise and it totally worked. And I just like, and I remember we actually like settled on those 3 verses. It was like, I didn't have anything extra.
Right.
That's what he wanted to use. And I put it in and there you go. And it was just one of those things that just like fell together kind of at the last minute. And I was really grateful because I think that track pushes people's limits who are traditional Ram Dass fans.
Yeah.
But that was sort of the point of this record, was to push the limits and try new things and put Ram Dass in new context. And I thought Stick did a good job of respecting what Ram Dass was saying. And that was another thing. Like, that's the only track, really. The other ones, there might be a singer. Krishna Das sings Mantra.
Right.
Trevor Hall sings Mantra. Laura Bird of the Minor Birds sing lyrics, but I wrote the lyrics and they're pretty simple. So I was, you're like, you don't want to add words to Ram Dass.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. It was like, is this a terrible idea? Like, are we going to sink this ship? You know? And I thought that was bold of Stick to say like, yeah, this is an experiment, and I'm going to be adding more words than Ram Dass is saying on this track, but we know Ram Dass is like the lead vocal, so to speak. So how do I speak to that? And I really just love that we took that risk and tried it and went for it.
It killed, man. Styx verses are really intelligent, as always. You know, they fit with that song, in my opinion, as a true like hip hop head, like flawlessly. Was Styx, was he familiar with Ram Dass's work at all prior, or did you?
Yeah, he wasn't a deep fan, but yeah, he was familiar. But kind of like a lot of people, just a little bit,
right?
You know, like I've seen this or I've heard that. Mm-hmm. And I sent him, everyone who worked on the record, from the graphic designers to Styx, I sent him a copy of Be Here Now.
Yeah,
you know, it's the first thing I do is I go to Amazon, ship them a copy of Be Here Now. I was like, if you haven't looked at this, you should look at it immediately. And then we'll talk, you know, and let's sit with that book for a bit. And so yeah, it's been a process of people getting to know Ram Dass through doing it. And
yeah,
you know, but except for someone like Krishna Dass.
right. Well,
he's deepest of all of us. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm glad that you did that. I often joke that I feel like I should have stock in Be Here Now, because that's one of those books. Totally. I have just loaned it to people so many times. I've bought at least, I mean, easily 24 copies at bare minimum over my life.
Me too.
But I'm happy to. It's like the more that book gets out there, to this day, it is as relevant as ever. All of his books I'm a fan of, but you know, that one just, it's timely and timeless, which is absolutely beautiful. And I want to thank you for taking that risk with that song, because, you know, just like when Raghu invited me to do this podcast on his network, that was like 3 or 4 years ago. I don't remember exactly. But I was like, really, man, are you sure? Because my first book was out, and like I said, Ram Dass had endorsed it. But, you know, there's Sharon, and there's KD, and there's Jack, and I think Joseph Goldstein, Lama Surya Dass. That was the original lineup, and me.
Right.
And of course, Raghu with Mind Rolling back when it was with David Silver. And I was just like, I mean, of course I'll do it. Like, I've been writing for magazines and doing interviews and stuff since literally high school. But I'm so glad that they allow me to host a show on their network where I'm able to have, I have sometimes more traditional spiritual guests, but I get to have like outside of the box spiritual guests and things that, just like with your song, kind of gently, you know, help nudge people in a, not a different direction, but maybe to open up a little bit more to other ideas. And I do thank you for that, man, for taking that chance, putting it on there. And it's a great song, great album, period.
Yeah.
But
yeah, and I wanted to make something timeless too,
yeah,
that could speak to people for a long time to come and not just be trendy. And I think the idea with having those different types of tracks, like the one we're talking about, Electronic Sea, to something like I Am Loving Awareness,
right,
is it's different doorways for different people's taste to get into the Ram Dass world. And sort of they go through the doorway that resonates with them, and then they're going to go into the ecosystem of Ram Dass, and they're down the rabbit hole.
Right.
And so I was just trying to create these different approaches, different doorways for people to walk in.
Yeah. Well, you did a great job with it. And so, you know, I know that prior to this, and I do apologize, I forgot the name of the album before this. Was it with, had to do with mushrooms?
Music for Mushrooms, a soundtrack for The Psychedelic Practitioner.
Yes. So,
yes,
I love talking about that on the show because I'm actually in recovery from drugs and alcohol. Yet I get a lot of shit because I am an advocate for things like psychedelics and plant medicines because I believe they have very real healing capacities. I personally haven't done psychedelics in probably like over 10-15 years, but I'll tell you, I mean, hundreds and hundreds like of times when I was a teenager and into my young 20s. And even though I wasn't into spirituality at the time, I'm incredibly grateful because that definitely helped expand my consciousness, continue opening my mind. And, you know, watching David Lynch films on you know, mushrooms, that'll change a person. So anyways, I like to address that on the show when I have the opportunity. So can you talk about that in relation to your own spiritual life and music and, you know, whatever you feel like talking about in regards to that?
Yeah. Well, you and I would not be talking if it wasn't for mushrooms, because there's a song on the record called Home where Ram Dass recounts his first experience with psilocybin, aka magic mushrooms.
Right.
And after he says psilocybin is my friend, which is just a funny line.
Right.
He says that psilocybin started him on the spiritual path.
Yes.
That's a big statement.
Yeah.
That means that he wouldn't have become Ram Dass. So all of this wouldn't be happening right now
right.
if it wasn't for that mushroom journey. And I could say reliably that for me it was similar, and that I had some experiences with mushrooms as well that really cracked me open and showed me that there was more to existence and consciousness and life and existence, that absolutely lit a fuse. Now, many things were on my path, just like Ram Dass. Many things led him to become who he is today. But there were certain catalytic events at the beginning that were powerful enough to really wake you up. And so for me, that was absolutely the case too. And so it's something I've always honored in my life in a similar way to you. It's not something that I personally do with much regularity, or that's, in some ways, it's not like this active part of my life, but for some reason I've become an advocate for it. And that last record, I designed specifically for that space, because there isn't anything out there for that. Mm-hmm. And my music came from that space. Like, I actually literally owe all of my work to the mushrooms, because I started 10 years ago leading underground psilocybin ceremonies.
Sure.
And so that's, and in doing that, I had to figure out, well, how do I lead people? And so I started playing music, and I started using looping pedals, and I started using field recordings and making it long form. And it was all very practical about how do I do this for 4, 5, 6 hours live.
Right.
And so that over time developed the lexicon musically that is all of my music today. And it would not exist if I hadn't been doing that. And that's why it is kind of unusual and unique and patient. It's because I was only doing it for that.
Right.
There was no commercial element to it. There wasn't even like a touring element to it until later, when like the yoga community picked it up and started giving me jobs and work and expanding my reach to other people. So I had this protocol, so to speak, musically, and system of doing this that I knew was working and that had been developed almost like in a lab for 10 years. And I thought, like, it's time to share this explicitly, because I had been sharing it without really saying what it was. Like, some of my albums in the past are from literally that space, live recordings. I just didn't say it.
Yeah.
And didn't matter really. But I thought, well, let's say it so that people can know and use it more intentionally. And I was also had my eyes on some of the research studies happening at Johns Hopkins and NYU. Yeah. Imperial College, because I wasn't satisfied with the music that they were using. And I'd met some of the researchers, and I was like, I felt like I was sitting on something useful, a tool. And so I just finally decided to drudge up the courage to just put it out there for what it is. And I put out a 5-hour record, which I wasn't even sure you could do on Spotify and Apple, but I did it, and it went out, and it's now just out there as a resource and a tool for people to experience. It's a 5-hour fully connected journey album that I'm sure, as I hear from folks, works for many things, including children's art classes, to putting it on in the morning while you do your yoga or cook. But it has in it a design and an inherent ability to guide you through that kind of experience, start to finish, almost, dare I say it, like a digital shaman.
Very cool. I like that a lot, digital shaman.
So, I mean, that's an incendiary phrase, but sort of intentionally so.
I really like it. So I know we're running short on time. We only have a few minutes left. I want to ask you a couple of just random, not so serious, fun questions. So can you tell us a fun fact about yourself that most people don't know?
Fun fact.
Yeah, fun facts.
None of them are that interesting. I mean, I'd say, like Krishna Dass and Raghu, I'm probably a self-prescribed curmudgeon, and I do my best to be more loving and patient. But, you know, that's something that probably doesn't come across in my music very much. But I'm always trying to open up and warm up. But I can go towards pessimism or
Sure.
negativity, and that's kind of seems to be my main obstacle in life is to work with that.
I hear you. I've battled with the nothing you do, but depression and darkness, and it's always there in the background. So I certainly
and I
can
asked
relate.
Ram Dass about that. It's a second track called Dark Thoughts.
When, yeah.
You know, I'm speaking about myself. I know it's a universal thing. Like, what do we do with this
yeah.
shit
yeah.
going on in the background and the suicidal thoughts and the pessimism and the nihilism?
Yeah. When I was in my early 20s, I actually attempted suicide twice. And to this day, few and far between, but I still get, you know, SI, suicidal ideation. So, and that's after like 20 years of work and therapy and mantra and, you know, meditation. And it's just there. But people like Ram Dass help you to see these are just thoughts and they're passing. And sometimes they do catch you. Sometimes you just let them float like clouds. But, you know, your 100% is different every day. So I really relate and do empathize with what you're saying. So how about what gives you the most hope in life? And if you don't like the word hope, you can use joy or I don't know, whatever you feel like.
You know, I would have to say off the top of my head, it's people like Ram Dass or anyone who is able to witness back to me in the moment a sense of optimism and love and hope, because it's something that's a character in all of us. But inside, often in our monologue, at least for myself, there's also that other voice,
yeah.
like we just spoke to, of doubt and of pessimism. And sometimes that, because it's inside and not voiced in a way, it can almost have more power, because it can cut the legs off of those feelings of hope and optimism in your mind, because because it exists, there's always the but.
Right.
But that, you know, or maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
And so when I can be in the presence of someone who's just giving me that feel that we both really want to believe and feel, and that a part of us wants and knows is true, that witnessing of it back to me gives me, it's a fuel, you know, and that's something that, and it's attractive. And I think that's exactly what Ram Dass, more and more as he gets older, is giving to the world. And you could call it unconditional love, because there's no condition to it. It's just this energy right. of love in the moment. And we just flock to it like flies.
Yeah.
Because it's you too, and it's him too. And you need that kind of tending the fire like that to keep it going. And that's, I think, how we do it, is to one another in giving it. And that is the golden rule, right? You know, it's encoded in the oldest teachings about. They try to just simplify it. It's like, just give what you want to receive in a way, because it just happens.
Yeah.
There's a magic to it.
I've often joked about this tablet or a meme I saw of Moses holding the two tablets, and it just broke it down even simpler. On one, it said, be cool. And on the other, it said, don't be an asshole. You know, like two golden rules right there. So I appreciate that answer, man. So on the flip side of that, what do you fear most in life?
Oh, pain, death, suffering. This is what my mind fears the most, for sure. Yeah, I mean, it comes up a lot. Yeah, a lot.
Yeah.
And after I crossed the 40 Rubicon, it was like a cliche. All of a sudden, I started thinking about death a lot more.
Yeah.
And my health and my abilities. I'm like, oh, you know, how many years will I have left to like just tour like this and be able to like physically play?
Right.
Yeah. There's a time limit. I mean, you could just say one of it's death, but I mean, hopefully it's 40 years, but fuck, it could be a day, you know? And, so I guess maybe I fear loss on certain levels, and I've gone through some suffering in my life that still has a resonance of trauma in me that, to be totally honest, I can't say it's gone. It's reverberating inside me, and I have to just witness that. And love that, and it has a charge to it as well.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing vulnerably. Again, resonate with all of it. You know, I just turned 41 in June, and, you know, already, like, physical issues for young, you know, 41 that are happening, and I'm in two bands, and I tour, but my touring is more for speaking engagements, and I write, and same thing, I worry, like, arthritis, I don't have it yet, but, like, between typing and playing guitar, like, so I hear you.
I think it would be, well, I just want to say,
yeah,
I think it'd be the worst irony is if like, I lose the ability to do my dexterity of piano, not from too much music, but from like an iPhone
I
or
know,
something
right?
like, you know what I mean? It's just like, oh, great. That's what got me in the end. It was like my thumb went out, you know?
My God. Yeah. So, all right. So as we end, I just wanted to, you know, last word. First of all, I wanted to share with people, where can they find you online, your music, website?
Sure. I mean, anywhere you listen to music, you can find East Forest, and okay. that'll link you to the ROM. You can through Ram Dass's profile too now.
Sure.
But that's where you can find my music. And I'm on all social media at either East Forest or East Forest Music.
Okay.
Instagram is probably the most active.
Cool.
And then my website, which links to all these things.
Yeah.
If you want to, like, I have my own podcast, or I do retreats, and I have videos and all the music and the merch, and like there's a double vinyl and CD for the record. That's the only place you can get it.
Awesome.
That's at eastforest.org. So not .com, eastforest.org.
Cool. So if you're checking this out on the Be Here Now Network site right now, just scroll down and we'll have that linked. Easy. We'll have it set up for you. Just click a button. It'll bring you right over. And like I do with all my guests, anything you want to leave listeners with? Last word, any thoughts at all?
Just tell the truth. Do your best.
Yeah.
Don't be an asshole.
Yeah.
Be you're cool.
Yeah.
Be cool, man.
You're my kind of people. I really appreciate your time, man. Thank you for putting out such an important album. Thank you for doing what you're doing. And thanks for your raw vulnerability in this conversation. It's really appreciated.
Yeah, I had a good time. Thanks.
Thanks, man.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. What would you like to get off your chest right now? Are you feeling lonely, unappreciated, or misunderstood? When you keep these feelings bottled up, they can affect you negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and work through whatever is weighing you down. It's a great way to increase your self-awareness, change negative thought patterns, and more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/beherenow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/beherenow.